have as our next presenter Colleen Fitzgerald from the University of Texas at Arlington. And as you can see from her title, she's talking about training communities and training graduate students, the 2012 Oklahoma Breath of Life Workshop. So welcome and thank you, Colleen.
Thank you. My co-author and co-director for the 2012 Oklahoma Breath of Life Workshop, Mary Lynn, is unable to be here, but says aloha. We'd like to make some acknowledgments, our funders, our participants, and the grad students and faculty who participated. My goals in this talk, first I'm going to briefly introduce the Oklahoma Breath of Life Silent No More workshops. The Oklahoma Breath of Life workshop presents a case study in training in which the goals of training Indigenous community members and the goals of training graduate students can take place simultaneously. And graduate training was a major part of a major goal of the NSF grant. So this offers a way to deploy limited resources effectively and train two diverse audiences. We're all thinking about how to balance competing demands, an increasing emphasis on training and language documentation, an increasing need to train in language revitalization, but limitations on resources like personnel and funding. So the big picture is that the value of satisfying multiple goals in a single training venue is highly important. The way we did this was by several methods: team selection process, mentoring, final projects, and reflections. And so I'm going to go through each of those. But first, I'm going to give you a brief overview of the Breath of Life model, which originated in California thanks to the Advocates for Indigenous California Language Survival and Leanne Hinton at Berkeley. And this workshop was designed for tribes which had no remaining fluent first language speakers, for whom archival materials are the key to bringing the language back into use. In Oklahoma, where there's 39 Indigenous tribes, 17 of those no longer have fluent first language speakers. So you could see this model would be very effective in the Oklahoma context. Makes sense, and it would serve the community needs. In terms of Breath of Life instruction, we start with using archives, both online and local. Then we move to looking at linguistics for language renewal. We had language renewal, community, and family. And in this unit, Daryl Baldwin, who is from the Miamia Project, was able to really share his perspective as a community member in the Miami tribe, but also bring this theme of language in the home throughout the week for all our participants. We had Tracy Harada Eds doing language learning and instruction. And then something that we innovated for the 2012 workshop was an introduction to databasing, where we used Flex, Fieldworks Language Explorer software, as a tool. And this came because in the 2010 workshop, in the evaluations, participants had seen the database that Daryl was working on, and they really were happy and wanted to learn more about databasing. We had a number of participants. We divided it into two levels because we had students with different backgrounds. Our level one, where we had seven participants, included Wichita, three Shawnee tribes, Nachi, and Alabama. And in level two, the level two participants, we had nine participants representing the Nachi, the Cheyenne, Fort Sill Apache, and the Miamia. These are our mentors and instructors from Breath of Life. Daryl Baldwin acted as the mentor for the Miamia group. We had two graduate students from OU and five from UTA. And these next slides will kind of give you the overview of the mentoring process. The way our day typically worked is that Mary and I, as co-directors, did morning announcements and participant concerns. We then moved into doing the linguistic instruction, learning linguistics as part of the key to unlocking the language. Helping the teams. So after lunch, the teams worked on homework and final projects with their mentor, and the instructors and Mary and I walked around and really tried to keep an eye and help give direction to the teams. And this was something that was essential to the Onaldi workshops in the 1990s, led by Akira Yamamoto and his team. So it was really helpful for us. There are also the components of learning to use the archives. This all took place at the University of Oklahoma and the Sam Noble Oklahoma Museum of Natural History, which has an excellent recording studio, and so participants were able to make new resources for their language as well. And being in the museum, there were collections of various cultural. So here we have stick balls, lacrosse sticks. We also had the Miami participants visit the ribbon work collection. So people were really able to have access to cultural connections to their heritage. And it wasn't all work. So on Wednesday evening, we took a break and we did cultural activities. So here are some of the participants and mentors playing games. And at the end of the week, we did feedback and evaluation. So all the participants were given a three-page piece of paper with questions that the mentors, the instructors, and Mary and I had kind of culled together. And it covered all the subject areas, things like effectiveness of mentors and teachers. And you know, it was something that we had people make sure to return to us before they left for the week. But we also had the mentors write a short reflection on their experiences during the week as a mentor, but also what they saw in terms of their participants. So it was anonymous, or people could identify themselves. And they were broken up. We asked people to represent what level they came from, so we could also see how things work for different levels. In terms of the recruitment and team selection, OU handled the participant recruitment for the most part. They had a GRA funded on the grant, and the GRA made 4 trips to different language communities in the state and did face-to-face recruitment. So they worked with Fort Sill Apache, Eastern Shawnee, Eastern Delaware, and Modoc. The GRA also called and emailed many other tribal offices, tribal and language representatives, they sent out brochures, answered phones, did follow-up information for any requests. And so ultimately we had 32 distinct contacts from 22 different tribes. We also did things at the Oklahoma Native Language Association. We set up a table in the October workshop so we could disseminate information. At UTA, we have a PhD in linguistics, which you don't have in Oklahoma. And so I had a larger pool of prospective mentors. And so I had responsibility really for trying to generate as many mentors as we could. Because not everyone registered early, we wanted to make sure we were always prepared so that if we had people at the last minute who wanted to attend, I had a pool of mentors. And because this was scheduled in May after classes ended, you know, students from non-local areas might leave town or have vacations. So, you know, kind of having a pool of waiting mentors was essential. But we also have lots of revitalization activities in the Oklahoma area. So there were a number of opportunities to kind of reach out to potential mentors, have opportunities for them to participate. We could see their skills and really have opportunities for them to participate in both the revitalization or flex training. So there were a lot of ways we could recruit mentors and evaluate them. And in terms of selecting mentors, obviously expressed interest was one of the factors. Traditional coursework and knowledge areas, so field methods, language revitalization, second language acquisition and pedagogy, Native American linguistic structures, these were all important factors. Not everyone had the same kind of knowledge base in their coursework. We looked at participation in voluntary activities as mentors or in doing things like we have a number of training activities on flex. I was teaching field methods that year at UTA, and so we had all the students in that class trained on flex. And we also looked for, in those activities, how did students do? Did we see positive performance as mentors so we could feel we would be able to effectively pair them with a community group? And of course, things like personality traits, people skills, maturity, patience, empathy. We were very happy with our mentor-participant pairing, and the evaluation results show what highly positive commentary we got. So all the questions had a strongly agree, somewhat agree, and then the same counterparts for disagree. But all I've represented on the slide are the places where people actually checked off boxes. So for my mentor displayed a sound knowledge of the information, you could see level 1, almost everyone strongly agreed. For level 2, most of them strongly agreed, but everyone agreed that the mentors had good knowledge. In terms of my mentor answering questions to my satisfaction, very strong agreement, so very positive response again from the participants. I feel comfortable asking the teachers or my mentor for further help. Again, very strong responses, strongly agree. So we were really happy to see on the evaluation form that our participants were in the anonymous context able to, you know, felt comfortable telling us that they thought the mentors had been really helpful. And there's this indirect evidence for this as well. In our questions about what would they want more in Breath of Life, in the Breath of Life program, many people kind of alluded to ways in which their mentors could help them do even more during the week. So from level one, some of the survey responses included picking out specific sentences that the learner actually speaks and showing how those can be broken into morphemes, or more flex, more breakup of sentence structure. And from level two, more work with our own languages with mentors' help. So you see a lot of confidence expressed by the mentor, by the participants, in terms of what the mentors would be able to do. We also mentored the mentors. So here's an informal mentoring moment where Daryl Baldwin was sharing some insight and wisdom. Because we had had a number of revitalization activities, we were able to give feedback to the prospective mentors, and we were also able to have individual meetings because they were our students, and so we saw them in lots of different contexts. And to cap off the week before we started the formal activities, the instructors, the co-directors, and the mentors all met together so we could really try and make sure everybody was on the same page, get a sense of how we were going to go about things. And that seemed to work really successfully. One thing that we did that was not something I think we did at 2010 was a midweek mentoring session. And we felt this was very successful, and we'll incorporate that into future workshops. So Mary, Daryl, and I saw a need to have that middle of the week session with our mentors, touch base. Maybe I'd see if the students had any concerns they wanted to identify. And it really did seem like that meeting was vital to the success of how we, how our mentors continued to progress over the week and support our participants in their work. The grad students were able to ask how to deal with specific situations, personalities, and to bring up concerns. And we had identified things we wanted to find a way to talk about, but maybe talk about in a group so everyone could benefit from that in their participant interactions. So it was great to be able to highlight dynamics and challenges that were coming up in these participant mentor groups and problem solve with them. And Tracy Hirata-Eds, who I think might be in the room but is in the next session, also helped mentors bridge the gap between linguistic structure and how to take that linguistic structure and implement it into an educational setting, so teaching. The mentors in their reflection talked a little bit about their experience in learning to be a mentor. One mentor noted, I learned that it takes work to get people comfortable with you. He and I walked around the museum and talked a lot about our families and his interest in another language. He was open to me giving linguistic examples from languages I've studied, and it helped us find some common ground. So this mentor was working with an individual and in level one, and was able to see some of the other groups maybe bonding rather quickly, but found a way to develop common ground with the person she was working with, listening, and really that ended up allowing the participant to open up about his passion and actual skills for linguistics before even coming to the workshop. And so they actually ended up having a really effective partnership as a result of her doing that. Another mentor noted that their participant didn't always seem particularly engaged in the sessions, was difficult to motivate about homework and the final project, so I tried to call in Tracy as a language learning teaching expert to help direct them towards a goal. You know, all of us, I think, know we're not always able to find the most effective strategies, and reaching out to someone else with different experience or a different perspective can be a real resource for us. And so that was something that this mentor did. She did reach out to one of the instructors in a way that supported the participant's goals, because this participant did want to use immersion methodologies. And so they were able to find and develop that project that would support them in their goals for teaching the language. One of the wonderful moments at the end of the week is when we have final day presentations. This is drawing from the California Breath of Life model, where on the last day, participants have a final project they've worked on all week and share it with all the participants. It's designed to empower the participants to apply what they're learning and allow the co-directors and teachers to assess the success of the activities. Level one presentations included several pattern books. The Wichita pattern book and PowerPoint used pattern sentences. So something like, what did grandmother want? She wanted, and then inserting an animal name. Or what did grandmother get? She got a bear. So this taught patterns, this taught animal names. It also worked on the irrealis, realis distinction in the pronominal system. We also had a pattern book from the Shawnee group, Brown Bear, What Do You See? This group was able to use teacher resource pages and pull out materials that had colors and animal names and had a script that they worked on and performed this as a group. This was our level one Shawnee group with their mentor. The level one presentations also included Alabama, the Alabama alphabet book, which was a PowerPoint recording. These participants had no experience at all with the Alabama language. This was their very first experience, and they recorded the, they'd never pronounced their language before, and they did the recordings for this. Oh, I turned the sound off. Level two presentations included a Miami making ribbon work presentation with a PowerPoint and then a lesson. This was also a way to get a women's perspective, women's activities into the language teaching materials. So here's the lesson, and here's trying to do the ribbon work. Another level two presentation was Chiricahua handling verbs. The verbs in Chiricahua are very complex and indicate the shape or texture of the objects that are being handled. And so there were several objects for each type of verb, so the lesson didn't end too soon. And the participant and mentor basically showed what they were doing. So he had her try to pick up things, and she tried to get the words right and pick up the correct object. And then other people, two volunteers from the audience, then tried that. And then after the lesson, the demo, we saw the range of complex forms for this handling verb, where you could see all the kinds of objects that are marked on the verb, that are part of the verb stem. And then four of those were used in the lesson. And so we were basically given grammar through immersion teaching as opposed to giving a grammar lesson. The Cheyenne, we had Cheyenne sounds not found in English, so long and short vowels, the velar fricative, and here's Joyce Twins doing the Cheyenne sample and some of her slides from her PowerPoint, and then she would pronounce these. So finding ways to keep teachers and learners engaged. Participants expressed a lot of positive feelings about the projects. One said, I plan to make changes in the way I'm presenting information. I'm also changing the type of initial information currently being presented. Another one noted, to be able to speak our language and teach others, thank you for everything. Our mentor was very good. Another, to begin a language class, had some ability of the tools but did not know how to make use of them, and more activities to do with the youth of my tribe. The mentor reflections. One of the principles of service learning pedagogy is using reflection, ideally before, during, and after the service activity, and I have a couple of papers on that. Although the mentors weren't doing this as part of a class, we did have them reflect because it's a great way to process the experience. And so not just their own experience, but what they observed of the participants' experience. And this reflection had several types of commentary. We had role of the mentor and being a mentor. I read some of those quotes. Also logistics and final project, which I'm not going to discuss. So one perspective is that mentoring isn't just about linguistics. So this person said, given that this was my first interaction with Native American community members, I feel that I would have benefited from understanding more of the sensitive cultural mores beforehand. As it was, I felt I had to play catch up to understand some of the cultural attitudes towards intellectual property and general views of the place of language within the community. I was able to navigate those issues by the end of the week, but a brief orientation to these issues beforehand might have made me a bit more comfortable at the outset. You know, these issues aren't always covered in field methods classes. This particular student hadn't had field methods. And, you know, there's a lot of different cultural perspectives on these issues. So even if we had some of this, these often emerge from the relationship that develops with the community. So it was a controlled environment where she could learn this. Another student said, I believe the mentor community member partnership format was instrumental in helping me to understand the personal value of language revitalization to a particular community. Breath of Life was a life-changing experience for me as a mentor, and one that I will always remember fondly. So to conclude, there is no better training than doing it. And that's for mentors, and that's for participants. The pre and post planning to the workshops that we did in 2012 really allowed us to maximize our resources in a thoughtful way. And the formal evaluations and the reflective writing allow participants and mentors to actively shape workshops and related activities for the future. Mentoring is a continuing collaboration. Work towards a long-term mentor, participant, and academic community relationships. It's very important to part of what we were trying to have go on in the region. There's also continual grassroots activities, training activities that keep participants and mentors involved throughout the year. And also generates new prospects. Other students, other community members hear what's going on, and it's something that strikes a chord with them. We've also been able to use social media like Facebook as a way of keeping in touch with participants after the workshop ends. So just last week, I'm director of the Native American Languages Lab at UTA, and I get these notifications, and Henrietta Ellis, who is from the Shawnee group, and Terry Parton, who's from the Wichita group, had this exchange on Facebook. I will never forget this week. I want to learn more. And Terry, it was a great week. I was looking at the immersion workshop flyer and noticed that was my picture from a year ago. I haven't gotten to work with our language lately. I miss it. Terry in July became president of her tribe, so she has had a little less time for the language, but it's obviously an important role for her to take in her community. And Henrietta is applying for the National Breath of Life, and also plans to attend our April Revitalization Seminar. So one of the things we did in our Oklahoma Breath of Life page, and I encourage you to like both of these pages if you are on Facebook, on our Oklahoma Breath of Life page, we advertise the National Breath of Life. So we try to advertise things that are out there, other institutes, so that we can help everyone stay networked. This post is another way in which one of our participants has benefited from the grassroots networking. Steve Doherty from the Eastern Shawnee Tribe was elected as a member at large for the Oklahoma Native Language Association. And the 1491s, if you are aware of the 1491s, they are a really amazing indigenous comedy group, but that actually really understates what they do. But they use YouTube and do a lot of social commentary, often using humor, as a way to talk about indigenous issues. And prior to Valentine's Day, they did collecting I Love You, how to say I Love You in indigenous languages, and then pulled it together in a video that they've posted on YouTube. So if you don't know 1491s, that's a great resource for people out there. And Steve is in the video saying I Love You in Shawnee. So it's really wonderful to see these different ways that participants are taking ownership of their programs, taking ownership of their agendas, and passing the word, spreading the word, and just really benefiting from this Oklahoma workshop. So thank you.
We've got about 7 or 8 minutes for questions.
I have a question. I'm at the National Anthropologic Archives at the Smithsonian, which is involved in the National Breath of Life Institute, and we had it there 2 years ago. We're having it again this year, and it's just wonderful. I'm interested to hear a little bit more about the interaction in the archives and then what kind of materials that we're using and
One of the things we tried to do is to make sure we had a list of 22 potential languages that might be attending. And so because of the database component, what my team did was they created 22 distinct database shells for each of the languages we thought might attend. And we basically did that throughout the year, so that if someone on May 1st said that they wanted to come, we didn't have to scramble, we had it ready for them. And then also we would have it ready for 2014. But as a consequence for creating these database shells, you have to learn the language. I mean, you have to learn enough of the structure of the language to put together the shell. And so we pulled grammars, dictionaries, published materials, journal articles, and set them up in Dropbox, which we were also able to use so that the mentors had access to the published materials on their languages. And then materials we had that were archival, so Sam Noble has the Carolyn Quintero collection on Osage. And so there's a lot of scans from field notebooks, although the Osage didn't attend this one. They were there in 2010. And again, that can be something done through Dropbox. There were also some scholars who shared materials, so The Wichita had some stuff from David Rood, and Mary and her archivist had gotten some stuff from David Rood. So we did as much as we could behind the scenes to get materials that weren't already at Sam Noble. We also made sure we had all the published materials, and we worked with linguists who were already out there on the languages. Is that?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I mean, for us at the archives, it was one of the sort of most rewarding things that we could have done to just see people engage with the materials. It's like, this is why we do what we do. So,
yeah.
So I was just kind of wondering, too, about the actual archivists, how they kind of responded to this.
I think everyone enjoyed having us there for the week. You know, Mary is the director of collections of the Native American Language Collection at Sam Noble. And so I wasn't actually, you know, there were two rooms, there were two levels, and so we weren't always at the same things. And she also was having to do some behind the scenes things. So, you know, I wasn't at some of the collections viewings, like the Nachi with the sticks. But, you know, what we tried to do, and I think what we're wanting to do for 2014, you know, we had the levels, we had the points for the databasing and the points that Daryl Baldwin did in the morning for Language and the Family that everybody was there for. And then we had the levels where the linguistic instruction was tailored to the audience. What we want to do in 2014 is maybe have something more buffet style. And again, as you do capacity building throughout the region, you're going to have people who are returning and want to push it more. We had done level two because we thought, because the Oto, Missouri, the Osage, and the Nachi were all saying they were going to come back for level two. But it ended up that the two of those tribes weren't able to come. But because we had planned for level two, we were able to accommodate the Fort Sill Apache participant who had done a lot of Onla activities over the past 20 years. The Daryl Baldwin came with five Miami University students who were also Miami tribe members, and we were able to accommodate that. So we were actually able to, and then the Cheyenne group, Joyce Twins, had been doing Onla activities for the region. So we think that actually having a buffet style will be able to have that flexibility to accommodate the differing backgrounds, but also allow participants to choose what their experience is going to look like. Some people want more teaching instruction. Some people want more grammar. Some people want it all, you know. But we the different components and kind of having them be a little more flexible, I think might allow us to continue to grow capacity in the region and then serve it in the workshop. Yeah. Carol?
Yeah, I was wondering about how you prepared your mentors for this experience. And so you selected them, you went over that, and it's, you know, you're kind of, it's different for you taking your mentors from one university as opposed to like the national one where they're coming from all over the country, you know. So what, can you talk a little bit about how you prepared them?
Yeah, well, we definitely, one of the big things we have in Oklahoma in April, and if you are in Oklahoma or think about coming to Oklahoma in April, it's wonderful. We have a revitalization seminar that is part of the Symposium in the American Indian hosted at Northeastern State. And so this year it's going to be on immersion for native languages. Ryan Mackey in Sunday's session is going to do a Cherokee immersion demo. But that was an opportunity, basically, to take as many of my prospective mentors as possible who were able to come and put them in groups and watch them. So, like, Dylan was there. We, you know, and I had you said, these are people we want to keep an eye on. These are people I'm thinking about asking. Can you see? How do you think they're doing? So there was one student I thought would really be great. Had experience with a non-Western language, had a great second language acquisition background. I think she taught ESL. But her frustration level in working in that group was not going to be conducive to the experience. So some of it was just putting people on the ground, seeing what's going on. Because of these workshops, there's a good cohort of us who are experienced with doing revitalization work, and there's always community members. You know, we have these sort of different groups, and we can walk around and monitor and help direct activity so that everyone's able to work effectively. So we had those kinds of things. And then we also wanted the participants to have some structural knowledge of the language. So we obviously had those personality things, but we wanted them to have structural knowledge. And so the Dropbox folders, where we had all the languages that we thought were going to come, and the mentors had access to those Dropbox folders prior to the workshop, and they were able to know, you know, so they could start looking at the materials. So some of them included the grammar sketches in native languages in the Southeast. So real nice, clear grammar sketches, for example, in Alabama. I was able to, because Mary kept in very good communication with me about who she thought might come and who was expressing interest, I was able to kind of forecast things. And so I knew we had some good prospects that Shawnee attendees would be there. And I had a student who was working for me as an RA. I had him do some stuff with a sock. Which is another Algonquian language. So I threw Algonquian stuff at him, so I had someone who could do Algonquian, who could work Algonquian. But we ended up having a number of Algonquian groups there, which is kind of amazing. We were doing Choctaw and field methods that year, and so that meant I had a student who was familiar with Muskogean, which when the Alabama group ended up at the very, I mean, basically like Mary said, tomorrow we've got to reserve these rooms. What do you think? And I'm calling the chief. I'm trying to get a hold of people to see if they could go, because I knew what had happened is they wouldn't be able to afford it, but because we were able to cover their costs, they were able to make it. And because we had, at the very beginning of the year, decided we were going to make 22 database shells, we had that ready, and because I knew the group didn't have any experience with the language, I was able to pair my mentor from the Choctaw Field Methods class, who has a TESOL certificate and is a really great teacher, has won a teaching award in our department, able to pair her with that. So a lot of it is just sort of, I guess, being teachers, you know?
I was just wondering if you brought them all together.
Yes.
As a group ahead of time for particular, like teaching them or training preparation lesson plans.
We had a lot of that. I mean, so in December we had a flex workshop that several of the OU mentors and the UTA instructor did. And so we did how we thought we were gonna teach databases. We did that. With pre-constructed Sauk, Choctaw, and Chickasaw shells, and then we're able to kind of, okay, this didn't go well. And, you know, so we had a lot of opportunities where people were able to do stuff and give us feedback so we could kind of continuously shape it through the year.
Yeah. I think we'll have to call it to a close, and more questions I'm sure can be asked later.